Hey guys, Pneumatic Musketeers. Chris and I are here with Patrick, or Kurtap, as people may know in the New England community. He's kind of a big deal, at least in the Stack Ops series.
Oh, stop it, you.
God
Well, you're only our God King.
King General. Don't forget the third.
Right.
Yeah, I have to add more space on my plaque to, add more titles as they come up. The most basic, I think, is probably my favorite.
Yeah, you do have quite the string of titles these days.
So it is it's Thursday, about 8 o'clock. Tomorrow, people are starting to head down to Spring Offensive 7.
That's exciting.
Yes. I think we're all heading that way.
Yep, I would hope so.
Yeah. For all I preach about people being prepared and getting ready, I haven't actually done any of my packing yet.
I've
It's all
been packing.
just sitting in a pile in my house, and I'm like, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah, I've got a couple piles, but it's mostly together at least.
Yeah, I've been sorting through all my airsoft stuff. Okay, I need this. I don't need this. Well,
Well,
I'm gonna need this for
you're reffing
photos.
at least,
Yeah,
so.
but I'm also taking my player kit. So.
Right.
Yeah, here's a fringe benefit of being commander. I don't actually have to like stock up on, actual playing things since I probably won't be doing much actual fighting anyways.
Yeah,
Well, at least
I've worked.
last game you took out a tank with a giant cannon.
Oh, I did do that, and I will be bringing the cannon with me.
I remember the goings on at what will be Castle Kurtap a lot at Autumn Justice, and for that express purpose, I'm bringing CO2 for you, because I remember giving you my last CO2, giving you my Thunderbee, the very end
And
there.
what did I do with it? I blasted a rocket into a room and killed everybody. Actually, I'm sorry. I think I might have killed everybody, then requested a refill, and I never actually used it because the game ended. But you might be happy to know that I did shoot somebody in the chest with that very same rocket from about maybe 25 feet away, just for laughs.
Great.
Oh.
Now, while you're still, I'm assuming since Kurtapalot's quite the young kingdom, are you still implementing infrastructure in it?
Like what kind of infrastructure
Like
are you talking about?
maybe a gas refinery? Would you maybe name it after me for my gas?
I can neither confirm nor deny any rumors of infrastructure like mineral resources, and
Didn't we
certainly
blow
not
up the
any.
last gas refinery? I feel like that was a plot.
Well, we need a new one now, don't we?
Yeah, of course, need a new one. Up and up, improving all the time, I say. The Kingdom of Kurtapalot actually is implementing for those hardworking professional parents a daycare. You might be interested to know. We're calling it the Dictator Tots.
And I think we now have a title.
Yeah. So, how long have you been like commander of the militia forces? How did you get started in that?
I think, well, I've been commanding since Spring Offensive 2, which was in 2009, so like 6 years now I've been doing this. And I wish I could say that Gordon Cobalt had approached me and asked and like requested that I be a commander for the game. But really what it is was the game was coming up and they were looking for a commander for it, and militia didn't have a commander and coalition's numbers were climbing, and so I said, you know what, I'll do it, I'll take a shot at it. And so it was really that was really kind of jumping into the water and like seeing if I floated then. And it was a good outing. It was very positive reinforcement for me too, because I did actually win that game, and I'm not exactly sure how. It came as a surprise to me. But yeah, so after that though, I just kept on going with it because I thought, this is something that I enjoy doing, and if you keep polishing at it, then eventually, you know, it starts to smooth out and become what it is today, which is really a very well-oiled machine.
Yeah, and certainly seems like people enjoy playing under you, as if I recall from the registration, Milfor accidentally locked Reg like 4 hours in or something.
Yeah, they, let's see, we registered like 125 people in one night. And when they reopened the registration for one evening, we registered 77 people in 3 minutes. And we closed the registration in 3 minutes.
Yeah, so you can definitely see, can't really have a stag ops game without Kurtap anymore.
Right, exactly. That's and as far as I can tell, I'm really one of the only characters that has like a story arc that carries out throughout the series, because, you know, characters have come and gone in the series. Pasha Oobs, who was assassinated, or just different other commanders. Coalition usually rotates out their commanders so frequently that they don't get a chance to really get.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, I was actually gonna ask about that. What's it like to run a faction for so long, considering KOFOR doesn't seem to keep a commander for more than a game or two?
Well, it's not so much that they can't keep the commanders, it's just circumstances outside of the series. Like, for example, when I started commanding, I was playing against Flatline, who stepped down from commanding because he actually joined IROPS. And I guess it was a thing that, IROPS, since it was an IROPS production, they didn't want to have somebody on their team running a team, or else it might seem like it was biased towards that team, if that makes any sense.
And it was a shame, too,
because I enjoyed playing against him. I drew a lot of inspiration from the way he led, which was very aggressive and at the front. And then after him, it was Boomer, who I'm actually playing against this weekend, who is also a very, very outstanding guy, and, you know, one of my favorite commanders to play against by far. He joined IROPS too, and so there was another commander down, and then there was Pale Rider, who did it for a cycle, and let's see, I'm not sure he joined IROPS. He might have gone off to do different things. He just wasn't able to do at that time. And then we had Trap was did it for a couple cycles, and I think that was just scheduling conflicts throughout the. Like I believe there was a, it was his birthday or something, and. Something important was happening, and he wasn't able to attend.
I don't know. Maybe I'm too much of an airsofter, but I'm like,
yeah,
playing a Stag Ops game on my birthday, best present ever.
Yeah, I would have to say I think the same way.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not too specific on the details of everything, but it's just a series of coincidences that keep Coalition commanders rotating.
Which, I guess I can see the appeal for Coalition in the slight way in that, like, while they may not be sure their new commander might be a good one, it does, might keep things a bit more fresh for them, because they're like, okay, so what's this one going to play like? Mixing up play styles a bit.
Well, what really keeps me on the path of, you know, keeping on doing the militia thing. And at this point, it's just a fact. Like I don't, but back when I started, I wanted to keep with it because, I used to go to the Pine Plains games that were up in New York at the Mount facility. And, I was on the alpha team, and, we never really had a solid commander. Like it was somebody new every single time. And we started to get our ass kicked a lot because Bravo was having the same commander every year. And eventually he was running into the same guys, and they'd just make the same plans over and over again, and they had consistency. And so that kind of demonstrated to me the importance of having consistency on a faction, especially if it's going to be a long series of sequels like the Spring Offensive Autumn Justice series.
Yeah, this is a. Is this the 13th or 14th game they've run now.
Let's see. It's Spring Offensive 7. It was... I think this is the 14th.
Yeah, because it was Autumn Justice 7.
Well, if you count October Surprise, it's 15th. Because didn't it kick off with October Surprise?
I'm not sure. I only started playing it Autumn Justice 2.
I've been creeping through the Nisag threads recently. Just for funsies.
That's good journalism.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
That's definitely something nice, is that Nisag, how old's Nisag now? It's like...
It really began in 1999, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's definitely something nice that it's got so much history, which is why it's kind of sad about, Massif or something, which the site, which was almost as old, I think, or started in 2000 or so, and it got crashed last year.
Massif, I believe, started around 2003. I'm not certain. I do remember when they came about, though, and that was kind of important because there wasn't too much of a Massachusetts airsoft scene.
Massif was the first airsoft forum I was on. And then once it crashed, I kind of started hanging around Nisag because it was gone.
I'm actually pretty certain, and this might just be an ego thing, that some of the some of the creators of Massif went to Massif mainly because I was such a jerk moderator on the boards. I was one of the worst. It was a fun time, just banning people fun. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I would imagine we're trying to conserve the community rather than shrink it.
At this point. Yeah, no, we would have an AOL Instant Messenger chat room with a bunch of people, and we'd take a vote who they wanted to ban just for fun. And it was usually, the one kid that everybody picked on. They're like, ban him for a week. And we're like, done. Gone.
Oh, that's terrible. But yet I remember doing stuff similar.
Yeah. So kind of getting back into the vein of beginnings in Airsoft, what initially drew you to playing, and how long have you been playing?
What initially drew me to playing? I think a lot of people have a similar story where, just kind of hanging around on the internet and you see these, I was looking personally for an actual 0.177 pellet gun to get, because what kid wouldn't want a real BB gun? And while I was looking for that, I started seeing all the Springers and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, these look very real. That's kind of cool. And they're not that expensive. And after a lot of, convincing and begging and pleading, my dad actually purchased one for me. And that was kind of like the beginning of the end, because once you find the Springer, then you're going to find the gas blowback. And when you find the gas blowback, you get into the AEG, and then it's the gear that goes with it. And it was just a slippery slope. So to answer your question about how long I've been playing, I think it's about 12 years now.
Wow.
I started the Springer story that happened in about 2002, and I don't think I played my first game until 2003. But that 12 years, just about. It's getting up close to about half of my life that I've been doing this, which is kind of scary to say out loud.
All right, so what's been keeping you playing all this time? I mean, Airsoft is pretty addictive, but that's a lot of time. How have you been keeping things fresh?
Oh, I hate it so much. Just, such a money pit. What really keeps me playing so much, and it's going to sound kind of cheesy, is just that a lot of my real friends that I have either played Airsoft or they do play Airsoft. Like, a lot of my closest friends don't play anymore, and you kind of forget that that's how you knew them. So it's really interesting when you can say, hey, you remember that time at Tallinn when we were stuck under a tree and, it was raining? And I was like, oh, yeah, we did do that.
I don't know. That's not really cheesy, because, I mean, if like you said, it's nearly half your life so far. It's like, that's a large amount of time that you'd spend getting to know people. And you're like, oh, yeah, these are the people I know. It's the community you're in.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, here's another interesting fact about how long I've been playing. There are players on the militia right now who were not born when I started playing, and that's kind of freaky.
Wow.
That's... Yep.
Yep.
But so it's that I have like a lot of my friends are playing airsoft or did play airsoft, and it's also just that, you know, you do something for half your life, and it's kind of hard to get rid of that habit. You know, it's one of my popular hobbies, and I have so much invested into it that it would be a shame to just stop playing someday all of a sudden. You know,
yeah,
like. Even all the guns that I have, like if I suddenly decided to sell them off, I just couldn't. I'd be like, I can't sell this for this much. It's worth way more than that. But, you know, it's mostly sentimental value for all the like the collection that I've had so far.
Yeah. Also, definitely collecting the gear and just being like, ooh, this looks cool. It's fun.
Yeah, we do that a lot.
Yeah, owning Generation 3 night vision equipment isn't normal, but on airsoft, it is.
Do you actually have Gen 3?
Yeah, I do, unfortunately. To all the listeners out there, if you're considering getting night vision, don't do it. It's addictive. It's a slippery slope, and you'll never, ever be able to look in the dark again without it.
I can't tell if I'm jealous or not.
Yeah, like...
I mean, and jealous you shouldn't be, because if you don't have it, it's a simple life. It's you go out into the woods and you rely on, you know, it's like being blind. You know, your other senses get stronger. You go out into the woods and you can't see that well, so you rely, you know you walk quieter, you're a little more careful, you're a little more sneaky. You know, you might actually get the drop on somebody. But with night vision, you feel like you're invincible. You're like, I can see everything. I don't have to sneak. I'm going to sneak up on somebody before they even see me. And next thing you know, you're getting zapped in the foot by the kid who was hiding under the leaves. But yeah, if you look through a pair of night vision, if I handed it to somebody and they look through it and they go, oh my God, I have to have this. That's the beginning stages. They start with the Gen 1 and then they realize that's not good enough. So they go to Gen 2 and then it's just a little bit further. You know, they're like, oh, it just costs a little bit more to get Gen 3. And, you know,
I'm just waiting for a couple years or so when suddenly there's some breakthrough in thermals and everybody's got those instead.
Yeah.
Thermal technology, I mean, this is just kind of as an aside, it might not catch on too much in airsoft. I mean, I've seen guys in the field using thermal scopes, and it's not, I'm like, oh, come on, dude, really? But the problem is with night vision, it's using light, it's collecting light, and so you can put things like sacrificial lenses and Lexan shields onto it. With thermal, the business end is... the lens, like if you block the lens, it's not going to be able to pick up any heat. So you've got that expensive lens out in front, just hanging in the breeze, and you take a BB in that. That's like what, like $8,000. So until we get to the day where casual airsofters like to spend that much money on their gear, then we might be safe.
I'm wondering if like some form of like a flash kill or something might work to still let thermal through.
It might decrease resolution looking through it, but you never know. I don't have one on hand.
Decreased resolution versus risking a couple thousand dollars.
That surpasses a couple thousand. Those things are so expensive.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I think it would be worth the downgrade for peace of mind and wallet.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but just buy it. You could buy like 80... you know, entry level, like you could buy 80 G&G Raiders for that price. You could outfit a faction with the money that it would cost to probably buy a thermal scope. So like I said, same thing with the night vision. I haven't looked through a thermal scope, but I bet if I did, it would ruin my day.
It wasn't a thermal scope, but I have gotten to use a thermal camera at local fire department, just poking around. Thermals are fun.
Right. So kind of getting back a little to our questions we were having. So Kurtap, you have this fairly distinct God King General type character. Where do you really draw the aspects of that from?
Well, I can tell you that the aesthetic styling of the general, what with the beret and the sunglasses, when I first went to Autumn Justice 2, I was put on the tribal team. They were, you know, rebels and kind of like outsiders compared to the other teams that were playing, the Americans and the Russians, I believe. And so I was like, oh, I'm going for like a rebel revolutionary. And I'm thinking, you know, like a Che Guevara thing, like the t-shirt that everybody sees.
Yep.
Like, that's pretty badass. Berets are badass. There was actually a beret kick for a while going around where everybody had one in their car and they'd toss it on when they felt like being badass. And, you know, it helped. It helped being badass. But I kind of stuck with that because the militia, it maintained the whole kind of revolutionary rebel aspect to it until we started to really pick up steam. But by that time, I had made a patch and, you know, a flag and everything. And so it's there. It's a part of it. As far as, like, personality-wise goes, that's mostly me, I think. I want to say mostly because there's a couple things that come out that I'm not exactly proud of that I can just say, oh, it's a character. It's a character, you know, like throwing a fit and, you know, stomping off the field angry and then calling everybody back to respawn and throwing them after one squad. That's a petty thing to do. And I write that off extremely as character.
The other guy did it.
The other guy.
Right. Yeah. No, you don't like you don't want to meet the other guy.
That was a general Kurtap, not a Kurtap the airsofter.
Yes.
Right, and I kind of had to I've talked to people before who were like, you know, you're really kind of an asshole. And it sounds kind of weird that somebody would say that to you, but then you're like, you know, I am, but at the same time, you have to consider that I'm kind of like portraying a role, you know? Like, I don't mean to be shifty, low down, gritty, and grimy, but that's just who my character is. So,
yeah. You
know, hate a little bit more.
That's pretty awesome.
And then I know this happens sometimes, but how often do people think of you as being General or now King Kurtap outside of the Stag Ops games? Because I know at the Revolt holiday party last year, a couple of us were saying, oh, the General has arrived when you showed up.
Yeah, you know, it happens more than, you know, I'd say almost more than I'm comfortable with, because I always like being recognized, but... Like, a lot of times I'll show up to games just to kind of not do anything. You know, like, I'm sure it's kind of hard to imagine, you know, me running around yelling at everybody, getting everybody into formation and everything is doing anything less than nothing. But sometimes I go to games and I'm just kind of kicking around on the field waiting for somebody to shoot. And people come up and be like, oh, my God, General Kurtap, what do we do? Like, what, like where do we go now? I'm like, I don't know, dude. Ask the guy who's in charge. I mean, after Autumn Justice, I was so into, like, the command role of it that I was getting really keyed up outside of Airsoft. Like, I'd at work, it was a problem. Like, I'd get into arguments with people, and then I realized that I was a little too aggressive, so I went to a game the week afterwards just to kind of, you know, calm down and do nothing, and then that kind of helped.
Yeah. No, definitely, there's been some, even though it's not command, but just playing Airsoft has gotten me better on the radio from playing the games, because I use radio where I work, so definitely some out of game stuff that Airsoft brings in.
Yeah, I think it's actually brought some leadership skills, even though I've never really been in a leadership position on the field. I have just grown to become one who kind of takes charge a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed that off the field as well.
Right, and that kind of goes back to how I volunteered originally into this leadership role. Before that, I hadn't really done anything. It was kind of a learning experience when I started. But, like, it's always, like, I always try to encourage people to step into leadership roles or roles that require a little bit more responsibility than what they're used to, you know, making the difference between the person who is standing around listening or the person who's actually standing up and, you know, telling people what to do. My platoon leaders, a lot of them, they were the ones who came to me and said, hey, you know, I think I can handle more than just being a squad leader. In fact, I think I want a couple more squads. Do you have a place for me? And absolutely, anybody who asks, I'm more than happy to, you know, give them a shot at being a platoon leader. But along with it, you know, you start to pick up the habits of a leader in that they stick with you outside of the game. Like the game that you're playing in, like you take it with you to different airsoft events or whatever. Like, it gives you a perspective of the needs of, like, in the future, it gives you perspective of the needs of people who are leading so that you can more effectively communicate to them, you know, what's going on out in the field or what you think should happen. You know, being on the radio, that's it. That's like 90% of it is just being in contact with the command. And you never really appreciate punctuality until you're standing around waiting for everybody. And that's another good lesson. Wear a damn watch.
Airsoft keep time, yay!
Yay!
And you know, I'll defer to my friend Cobalt. He always used to say in his briefings, you know, he who loses track of time loses track of victory. And that is very true. If you look in any picture of me from the game, I have a watch and I'm constantly checking it just because you have to know where you have to be at a certain time, what happens at certain times, you know, what you're going to be doing in that amount of time. Definitely punctuality is something that being in a leadership position gives you good practice for. Or even when you're the guy who's calling the shots, it's like having it's like having extra arms. And, you know, for this game, I have like 260 plus extra arms, but you start to work over the things in your head. You're just like, oh man, if there were just more of me, if only I had this many dudes, I could, you know, do this maneuver. And it gives you the chance to really practice your abstract thought and tactics.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. No, on time is definitely important. And I am definitely glad to see that they switched back to two registration booths at Spring Offensive, because they only had the one last game.
I think that was actually on the part of UBG, though. I think they only had one terminal available.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what I saw in the AARs.
It was actually one of the first times I've seen an event this size taking cards at registration. So that it was the terminal just swiping the cards over and over and over again that slowed it all down and everything. You know, it's bound to happen with anything new being integrated.
Yeah, but this time, from what I saw, they have the card line and then they also have a cash only line.
Right, and you know, it's definitely a good idea for everybody to bring cash if they can.
Yeah.
You know.
But it was definitely because it was standing in the line for a while, which I think slowed down getting the game started, because I got there at, I want to say, about 8, and I wasn't even through registration until shortly before PCI happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it delayed us by about a full hour, I believe. It set us back, and that was scoring time that everybody lost. Like, because Stag Ops didn't want to, you know, set the game back by another hour, they just said, well, nobody scores for that hour. We're pretty much into, you know, 1400 right now. But, that's the kind of thing. And, you know, showing up as early as you possibly can. Something that people may not know who are camping out on Friday is that you can go to the pro shop and actually pay your field fee on Friday to the field, since they're the ones collecting it anyways, and avoid the whole process on Saturday altogether.
Which is definitely pretty cool, and as you posted, it's going to be a busy weekend, so try and get there early, because there's like well over 500 people probably showing up to this game.
Yeah. One thing I was always told at one of my summer jobs, and I think this should really apply to Airsoft, given the whole concept of Airsoft time, is early is on time, mm-hmm. on time is late, and late is unacceptable.
I really could not agree more with that.
Yeah.
It's especially when, you know, people who are late kind of start holding up everything else. They don't, and if they had the perspective of how being late really affected the entire team, then they wouldn't be late. So when they show up late and they're like, oh, sorry, we were late, it's really hard to express to them how much they're kind of letting the team down, because they didn't really understand to begin with.
Yeah, and just from talks I've had with other people on ref staff who have actually refed previous events, when you show up late, you hold back your whole squad, So you're costing your team a squad. It's going to be taking people away from actually reffing the game and helping that run more smoothly to get you in. And it's just a detriment to everyone's experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things, like, you need to know the rules, whether you're a new player or you're someone who's a veteran of multiple nationals. It's right. This event, you need to know the rules for this event. You can't just assume.
And it's not just, making it easier for the rest of your team. It's making it easier on yourself. The personal benefit is huge. You can show up to a game, 4 hours early and still not have enough time to prepare because things always go wrong. You know, guns break. You're running around trying to get things fixed. And all of a sudden, it's time to get started. And you've got safety briefing after safety briefing. And then you have no time at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. I will... I'm heading down there tomorrow night, so I'll be a 20-minute drive away, and I'll be getting there nice and early.
Yep, I'll be, I was told to be there for 6:30 both mornings, so I'm heading down there tomorrow afternoon with a teammate of mine, actually, of mine and Morgan's.
Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm. Now, is Stag Ops isn't running the gate, are they? That's going to be the field?
I don't think... that Stag Ops is running the gate. I think it's the field. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty much told just find Nightshade when I get there. Talk to him. Ask him to tell me what he needs.
Yeah, that's what everybody's told. Just find Sam.
Yep.
He'll tell you what to do.
Yeah. Well, I think that about covers everything we had listed. Thank you for doing this interview with us, Patrick.
Hey, it was my pleasure.
We'll be getting this up either tonight or maybe tomorrow.
I think this should go up tomorrow.
Yeah, podcast will go up tonight.
Podcast is tonight.
So, thank you again. Be seeing you in like 2 days at the game.
Yeah, you sure will be.
Yeah, well.
Tomorrow. See you on the field, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a good night.